on MTV, which I don't watch that often, although last week's dancing around might have convinced you otherwise. I really don't. But on MTV, I have caught an episode or two of a show. It's a reality dating show called Room Raiders. And it's very bizarre, but here's the premise. The contestant is allowed to go into the room of three potential dates, bachelors or bachelorettes. All pictures of the potential dates have been removed from the house and or covered so that the contestant doesn't see what they look like. They can only look at the person's bedroom, basically. I mean, they walk through a little bit of the house to get there, but they're looking at the person's bedroom. And then they can do whatever they want. They can, you know, examine what's there, go through the drawers if they want to. They look at, you know, the way it's decorated, how clean it is, how dirty it is, what sorts of things the person seems to be interested in. And of course, the potential dates are all secluded in a van somewhere watching this person look through their stuff and commenting on that. And then at the end of the show, at the end of the episode, the contestant has to pick which person they're going to date based on what they found in their room, what they learned about this person by going to their room. Now, I don't recommend this as a method of picking a life partner. I don't know that it's a terribly effective dating strategy even. However, there's some truth in it. And the truth is this: our dwelling places, the spaces in which we live, the spaces we inhabit, they say a lot about us. They can say good things, they can say bad things. I mean, I thought about bringing a picture of my bedroom today and putting it up on the screen, but then I thought, what that would say is that I don't do laundry very often. And I don't hardly make the bed ever. I mean, you're just going to get right back in it, so what really is the point? And maybe I didn't need all of you to see that. I could just describe it to you and embarrass myself that way.
And me.
And you. Just my side of the room, really, which is the messier side. But we do. We learn a lot about people when we go into their space, when we go into their home, right? When we enter that dwelling place or when we see the way it's put together. So Paul says to the Ephesians, you are the dwelling place of God. You are a household of God, and you're built together on the foundation of the prophets and the apostles, which is also kind of a way of saying the wisdom, the teaching of the people of Israel, which we would have in the Old Testament, the wisdom and the teaching of the apostles, the people who knew Jesus or learned from Jesus, which we have later in the New Testament. Built on that foundation with Christ as the cornerstone, the most important part, holding it all together, and fashioned by God into this place for God's Spirit to dwell. Now, at the time that Paul was writing this letter, there weren't churches. The church met in people's homes. So, I mean, it really was kind of like Room Raiders. You really did go into somebody's house and just sort of, you know, you learned a lot about them there. But over the intervening millennia, we've begun to build these houses of God, these churches. And they say a lot about who we think God is. Nowhere is that more apparent than in this particular part of the church, the sanctuary, right? This whole room is constructed and reconstructed and changed and reordered and organized and set up and used in a way that communicates who God is. Here's my for example. Does this mean something different when I'm up here by the altar? Aside from the fact that I get a little bit dizzy because I feel so far up in the air. The first Sunday that I led worship here, I brought the offering plates up and I placed them up here on the altar and I turned around to say the prayer and I went, oh my goodness. I practically have vertigo up here. I wanted to like get down as fast as I can. I feel so far away. Does that in some way say because it was built at a time, or because it is what we believe, maybe. I don't know. Does that say that God is far away? Not like, you know, remote, distant, but like untouchable. So good, so pure that we need some distance. God has to be up there, and maybe one, maybe two people in the course of the worship service can ascend to the altar of the Lord, but that has to stay up there, and we have to stay down here. I mean, I don't preach all the way down here because then I can't see your faces as well. And I need to know when you're like nodding off so that I can do something loud and wake you up. But I like to be down here because I'm using the space to communicate what I believe about God, which is that God is right here with us. And that when we're talking about God, there's nothing like kind of special or magical about me, except that I'm leading this moment and we're having a conversation, hopefully, between each other and with God. And that this is kind of a community, a family. And so I want to be as close to you as possible, and I sometimes get my toes all the way up to the edge of the lip of the step so that I'm almost out there, you know, as close as I can get, because that's what I believe. And so I'm using the space in a way that communicates what I believe about God. The space is constructed to make us feel small. Look at how high the ceiling is. To feel like we are in the middle of something magnificent, to inspire in us a sense of awe. And therefore, it communicates that God is magnificent, huge, that we are small, and that we are moved to a sense of awe. That's what a sanctuary does. Not all sanctuaries are like that. Some are smaller and kind of really close together. Or when we worship downstairs and the fellowship hall becomes our sanctuary, we're communicating something different, that God is intimate, that God is very personal. That God is wherever we meet, that some sanctuaries, some churches don't have sanctuaries per se. It's just a normal room or like a gymnasium, or they meet in somebody else's building or space, and that communicates something else about what they believe about God, perhaps. Or how the space is used, not just, you know, how it's set up, but how it's used. Like I said, if I come down here, it communicates something different than when I'm standing up there, or I'm standing way up there. Or how we use the rest of the building, because this church has more than one room. It has lots of rooms. How much space do we use in this building making sure that hungry people get fed? Three rooms in the basement, plus an office, the fellowship hall, and the kitchen at least once a week. Are we not communicating that we believe God is seen when the hungry are fed? Is that what we believe about God? I think that's what we believe about God. Our use of our space suggests that perhaps that's what we believe about God. It's not right, wrong, indifferent. I'm not saying we'll use only one room to have Sunday morning worship and we use five rooms to feed people. Well, but we are worshiping God as we do that. Because I think we're communicating that we believe God is seen and served and worshiped when the hungry are fed. How we use our space tells other folks something about God. Because if this is God's house, if this is God's dwelling place, then the way in which it's used tells people something about who we think God is. The way it looks tells people something about who we think God is. Is it well cared for? I mean, it's a hard task because it's so big, but it's lovingly cared for. You know? What parts are inviting? What parts are exciting? What parts are comforting? What parts are confusing and hard to navigate? All of this stuff says something about who we believe God is. Where we place our effort, where we place our focus, the way we use it. If this is God's house, if this is God's household, then how we use it, how we arrange it, says something about who we believe God to be. But of course, Paul wasn't just talking about, in fact, he wasn't talking at all about church buildings, because they didn't have them. He was talking about a more metaphorical household. He was talking about a community as a household. And my example for this is that you can learn a lot about a person also in a dating situation, not by going to their home to meet their parents or their family, but by going to their home to meet their parents or their family. That's the operative thing, right? That's a moment when you encounter that person's cultural space, not their physical space, their cultural space. You learn a lot about a person then. And we are the cultural space that is the household of God. So another, for example, again, to pick on my own family. But that's okay. You're welcome, honey. I mean, what would I preach about? I don't know. I don't know what I'd preach about without this. So for Benji, meeting my parents, my mom, my dad, my sister even, wasn't that big a deal, wasn't that intimidating. He met them kind of separately and, you know, in different places and stuff, and it was pretty okay. The big one was meeting my grandmother. Okay, Now, this is my mom's mom, and my mom is from an Italian Catholic family. My grandmother lives in an upstairs apartment in Queens, or she did at the time. And I said, okay, well, there's some rules here that you need to know upon entering that cultural space, because if you don't know these rules, you're going to be uncomfortable, or they're going to be uncomfortable, or it's going to be really confusing, and bad things are going to happen. So here's the thing. When you walk into my grandmother's space, any space she occupies, doesn't matter, she will immediately offer you food. Immediately. And you had best take it. So it doesn't matter what time we visit. We might as well visit at a mealtime because she's going to feed us anyway. So we'll go for lunch, and she will offer you food. Now, here's the trick. You can fill your plate, but not all the way, not with everything you think you can eat, because you must take seconds. If you don't take seconds, she will be offended. So you have to fill your plate, but not too full. Okay, and then you eat everything on the plate, and then you ask if you may have seconds, which is just going to make her day, because that means you appreciated her food and her hospitality, and so you take seconds. And then you try to finish it. I mean, you can leave a little bit on the plate to say, I'm really, really full, but you don't want to leave too much on the plate, or she'll say, manja, manja, there are people starving. You know, so you want to leave maybe just a smidge, you know, a little portion on the side there that you just couldn't get to. I said, then you put your napkin down the table. You push the plate a few inches forward. In front of you, you lean back in your chair. If you're feeling really comfortable, you unbutton the top of your pants. Because that says that you're really full. And you exclaim, oh my goodness, I couldn't eat another bite, which is her cue, like clockwork, to offer you more food. Are you sure you wouldn't like some more? There's plenty of ziti. No, no, you say. I can't possibly. It was delicious, mind you. It was so good, but I can't eat another bite. And she'll offer another two or three times, and you decline another two or three times, and you have entered her cultural space. And you have done well there. It went almost exactly as I described. Almost like I had a script. I also said she's going to ask you, and actually she didn't because my aunt was there, because my nonna could be a little bit more reserved and my aunt was less subtle. My aunt was there, but I said they're going to ask you what church you go to. And then they're going to be confused when you don't say Her Lady of something or other or Saint so-and-so's because you're not Catholic and they're not going to know what to do with that, even though you're dating someone who wants to be a Protestant pastor. That's still going to be confusing. And sure enough, my Aunt Evie said, what church do you regularly attend? Not like, you know, do you go to church? What church do you regularly attend? And when Benji responded, my mom is a pastor, they both kind of tweaked out a little bit, like, what? What? How, your mom? I mean, pastors can't be women, and they can't have children. What? Oh, you're one of those. You're Protestant. They finally got it. That was, like, it wasn't in their script, you know? That was a different cultural space. And they had to, I mean, you know, there's no way for him to enter that cultural space because, you know, because he's not Catholic, and he's not going to be, and I'm not Catholic anymore, I'm going the other way, and, you know, so then they had to kind of, oh, they're being initiated into a different cultural space, okay? So we have a cultural space, too. We have a physical space that communicates something about what we believe God to be, who we think God is, who we think other people are, and how we interact together with God, and then we have a cultural space as a congregation. As a community, we have a cultural space, and that communicates things as well. And just like a family, there are those unspoken rules that if somebody doesn't know, they're gonna have blunders. You know, there are those things, those assumed things like that you will eat whatever my grandmother puts in front of you, or that you will push your plate away when you're done, or that you will know the parish, the Catholic parish you go to, by name. You know, there are these assumed cultural things like that you'll know how to say the Lord's Prayer. Who doesn't? That you'll know what doxology number 95 means, and that it means you should stand up because there's a little asterisk next to it, and that you should sing it to the tune of Old 100th because that's the tune that we sing it to here, but that's not what everybody does everywhere, and, you know, so on and so forth. Little things like, you know, that you shouldn't sit in X seat, who knows which one it is, because that's somebody else's seat. And if you sit there, you're going to be in trouble. There are some things that are pretty easy to learn or to pick up on or can be taught, like the words to the doxology or something like that. Some things that might be intimidating the first time, you know, like how do we take communion? People come down the center aisles, they come along the side. Do I dip the bread? Do I eat it? Everybody have been to a place where, you know, they were serving by intinction, dipping, and you are used to eating and then drinking the juice or the wine separately, and so you pop the bread in your mouth and then you go, ooh-ooh. You know, because you have a piece of bread in your mouth and they're holding the cup for you to dip into, and they're like, no, you can't drink out of it because there's all kinds of crumbs that's icky. No, you have to dip. And you're like, do I spit it out? What do I do? You know? How awkward is that for some? I've seen people, and I'm just like, have another piece of bread. It's really okay. But, you know, as you see the look on somebody's face when they realize that, like, they didn't know what they were supposed to do, and then they're embarrassed, you know? It's like you've gone into somebody else's home, into somebody else's family, and you don't know what's expected. And it can be embarrassing. We wouldn't laugh at somebody if they didn't know where the bathroom was. We'd just say, oh, it's downstairs and it's on the left as you come in the main doors, or, you know, whatever. We wouldn't make fun of a person for not knowing that. We don't really make fun of people if they don't know the Lord's Prayer or something. We're kind of like, oh, they didn't seem to know what to say there. Wonder where they came from. You know, maybe they're Catholics. Catholics pause. They don't do the "For the kingdom, the power, and the glory are yours" part right away, which was really fun when I was Catholic to bring Protestants with me, because they'd keep going and everybody else stopped and the Protestants would keep going and it was like, shh, shh. You know, we have these cultural assumptions as a church, as a denomination, as a local congregation, cultural assumptions. Well, Troy Conference, our conference, has been doing some work with a man named Eric Law, who teaches about racism, but also about cultural differences and inclusivity, which includes a whole vast range of stuff having to do with race, but a whole bunch of other things. And so he's been teaching a lot about those cultural differences and those assumed safe spaces, assumed knowns, assumed commonalities, and that they're not always what we assume them to be. And so he talks about exclusive places or practices, like the things I've been mentioning, right? You know, those assumed things that we all know, insiders know, but a visitor might not, or somebody who's coming from another place might not know. And there are a whole bunch of things that are kind of more general than that about church and church culture that, if you've never been a part of church culture, aren't clear. What do I wear? Can I wear jeans? Can I wear shorts? Can I wear a t-shirt? Can I wear a hat? Do I take my hat off? Does it matter if I'm a boy or a girl if I take my hat off? You know, all these sorts of things. Do I laugh? Is that okay? Do I applaud? Is that okay? Can I bring my kids? Should I not bring my kids? Where should they sit? You know, what happens if they run up and grab the bread off the communion table, which happened in one place that I was at one time? You know, what happens if they misbehave? What do I do? Can I bring the person that I'm living with but I'm not married to? And are they going to know? Is that, like, going to be really obvious to those church people? They have, like, little blinkers and they're going to be like, is that going to be okay? You know, the answer, by the way, to all these questions is yes. You can do all of those things, really. And what happens if the child runs up and takes the bread off the communion table as the pastor says something about a little child shall lead them? May we all come with joy before the Lord. And business continues, and it's okay, but, you know, these things happen. But people worry about this. What time do I show up? I know it says that church starts at 11, but do I arrive a little early? Do I come right at 11? If I'm a little bit late, can I still come in? Yes, you can still come in. If you're a lot late, you can still come in. If you want to come in right before the closing song, fine, come on in. That's okay. I'll still count you as being here today. What do we do? How do we behave? Is this a place I can be welcomed and comfortable? There are these exclusive things that we know that we don't even realize that we do, that somebody else might not feel comfortable with. And then Eric Law says we need grace spaces. And grace spaces are when we step outside of what's comfortable for us or what's assumed for us. We meet other people where they are, and we give them the space to make mistakes. So, you know, if they are sitting in your pew, we're pretty good about this, you know, but if they're sitting in your pew, to not be like, hey, you're sitting in my pew. If they don't know the Lord's Prayer, to assure them that it will be on the screen, or that they can find it in the hymnal, or if they're not sure when to stand up or sit down, or you sing or not, or respond or not, that to help them with that and let it be okay. If they don't know which direction to go for communion, that we teach that we say that. When we're serving communion, you will come down the center aisle, you know. That we give people a heads up. That we let it be okay for somebody not to know. Just as it's okay to not know where the bathroom is, it's okay to not know how to turn to the gospel reading in the pew Bible. So it's okay to know, you know, be told what page it's on, rather than, well, just turn to the Gospel of John, chapter 3. Well, you know, is that the beginning, at the end? I don't know. And so grace space allows people the opportunity to come in, to make mistakes, to not come in and to be met outside, or to be met in one of those other places and those other things we do, where people are fed, where children are taught and given a space to run around, where people come in during the week, and to meet folks there. So I want to give an assignment to you. You know I love to give assignments. Over the course of the next week or more, I want you to pretend that you've never been here before. I want you to interact with this building, and you know, for some folks who are newer or who are visiting, this is pretty easy, so you get a freebie, but that's all right. I want you to interact as if it's brand new to you, as if you haven't been here before. And what strikes you about the physical space? What is it communicating about God, the building? What's inviting? What's exciting? What's welcoming? What's not so much? What's off-putting or confusing, or you're unsure? Do you come in the front doors? Do you come in the back door? What's unclear? How might that be made clearer and more inviting? What does the use of the space say? Is this a congregation that values serving the community? Is this a congregation that values, what is it? What is it communicating to you? What is the cultural space communicating about God? Is this a place where people feel welcomed and invited? Do I know what to do during the worship service, or is it confusing at points? And to interact with the church as if you've never met her before, to interact with members of the congregation as if you've never met them before. I mean, I don't mean like, hey, who are you? But imagine, what is this like for those outside? To put on those outside eyes and see where there might be greater need for grace space, where there might be a need for our use of our space, both as a community, a cultural space, and our physical space, to communicate something else, something more, something different about God. What are we saying in this household of God, this building? What are we saying in this household of God, this community? And may we say it ever more clearly, more joyfully, more abundantly, and to more people each day. Amen.